ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। आश्रितिं भक्तिमुदास्यते विभो क्लिश्यन्ति ये केवलबोधलभ्यते तेषाम् असो क्लेशल एव शिष्यते नं याद्यता स्थूलतु सावकातिनाम्। माय डियर लॉर्ड, डिवोशनल सर्विस अन्टु यू इज द बेस्ट पाथ for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result, as a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain. One who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Loving service to the Supreme Person is the natural and eternal function of every living entity. If a person renounces his own constitutional position and instead laboriously seeks to so-called enlightenment through impersonal speculative knowledge, his result is simply the trouble and bother that come from following an artificial process. A fool may beat an empty husk, not knowing that grain has already been removed. Similarly, foolish people throw their mind again and again into the pursuit of knowledge without surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is the very substance and goal of knowledge. Just as grain is the substance and goal of the entire agricultural effort, Vedic knowledge, or indeed material science, without the Personality of Godhead, is exactly like an empty and useless husk of wheat. One may argue that by practicing yoga or cultivating impersonal knowledge, one can acquire prestige, wealth, mystic powers, or even impersonal liberation. But these so-called gains are actually useless because they do not situate the living entity in his constitutional position of loving service to the Lord. Therefore, such results, being superfluous to the living being's essential nature, are impermanent, as stated in the Nrsimha Purana. Patreshu pushpeshu paleshu toyeshu akirta labheshu vidaivasastu bhaktya sulabhye purushe purane mukye kim artam kriyate prayanta. Since the primeval personality of Godhead is easily attained by offering such things as leaves, flowers, fruits, and water, which are all found without difficulty, why does one need to endeavor for liberation separately? Although the process of devotional service to Lord Krishna is very simple, it is extremely difficult for stubborn conditioned souls to completely humble themselves before the Supreme Personality of Godhead and absorb themselves 24 hours a day in His loving service. The mood of devotional service is anathema to belligerent conditioned souls determined to defy God and enjoy. When such stubborn conditioned souls attempt to bypass surrendering to God through proud attempts at philosophical speculation, austerity, and yoga, they are turned back to the material platform by the powerful laws of God and violently merged into the heaving ocean of insignificance called the material world. Translation: My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result, as a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. This prayer being spoken by Lord Brahma, who is immersed in sublime realization. Lord Brahma is the greatest of all learned pundits. He is the most powerful of all mystics. He is the recipient of the results of the ultimate sacrifices. And here, one who has all of this understands the value of it. He explains that it is all useless for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without the grace of Krishna, without the causeless mercy of Krishna, no one can understand his constitutional position. No one can understand and realize the divine love within. Lord Brahma explains that ultimately the result of even the greatest fruits of enjoyment in the heavenly planets, even the development of all the great eight siddhis, even liberation, the result is only the trouble that we take to try to attain these things. Because ultimately they all come and they go. They are all temporary. They are all lost in due course of time. And after it's lost, all we have to show for it is all the time that we wasted in acquiring it, in enjoying it, and in losing it. Abramabhuvanaloke punar avatanarjana. Krishna says, you can perform for many, many lifetimes sacrifice and austerity and ultimately attain the supreme heavenly planet of Brahmaloka, and you can enjoy there for billions of years, but ultimately you will fall down as soon as your good karma is exhausted. And then, when you're again in the body of an insect or some lower creature, what is it that you have gained through all that you have done? Nothing. Everything's come and gone, like a dream. And the only thing you have to show for all of your lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes is the time that has been wasted. All of the austerities, and then enjoying the fruits of the austerities, and through the whole time, your mind has simply been bewildered in forgetfulness of the real goal of life, which is to attain the mercy of Krishna, which is the only ways and means for eternity, knowledge, and true bliss. So Brahma is explaining that we should not waste our time. It is like beating an empty husk of wheat. Here in India, we often see, especially in the villages, people very much just, they take their wheat or their rice and they want to, they beat it with sticks. They beat it and they beat it and they beat it to somehow try to beat the husk off the grain. And now, by the grace of advancement of civilization and tremendous sense of scientific economic development in India, now they put the grains on the highway and let the trucks run over it, so they don't have to work so hard to beat it. And in this way, not only do the grains get broken by the filthy, dirty wheels of these trucks, but they also are enhanced with the aroma of carbon dioxide. But anyways, it's a very troublesome task. Just beating and beating and beating and beating and beating these grains. And what kind of a foolish person is it that beats the husk where there's no grain inside? What do you get out of it? The only thing you get out of it is the time that you've wasted and the energy you've wasted. That same time, that same energy could have been utilized for something most valuable, for the supreme goal of life. The Vishnu Purana explains that the greatest tragedy, the greatest misfortune in all of creation is one moment of a human life lost without developing love of God through the process of devotion. Lord Brahma explains that these other processes of austerity, of yoga, of jnana, he says they're very, very troublesome, very difficult to attain anything through these processes. And it is impossible to reach God through these processes. Krishna explains Gita, bhaktosi me shakacheti rahasyam hetat utamam. It is only by my mercy, it is only by my personal revealing of myself to my devotee that one can understand me as I am. The example that is often given by the great sadhus is that you cannot force the sun to rise. In the middle of the night, you can do all sorts of pujas and you can chant all sorts of mantras to Vivaswan Surya, and you can fast all night long, but the sun will not rise on the basis of anything you do. The sun will rise according to its own accord. In the same way, realization of Krishna is like the rising of the sun in the horizon of our hearts. And only when Krishna, by his own sweet will, decides to reveal himself, can we understand the absolute truth. There's no other way and there's no other time. And Krishna explains in Gita, Ye yatamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamyaham mama vart manu vartante manusya parata saravashaha. That as you surrender to me, I reveal myself accordingly. He doesn't say, as you become very, as you give up eating, or as you give up sleeping, or as you learn the scripture very, very profoundly, he says, as you surrender to me. And what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? It means, as it is explained in this purport, to be humble and accept the will of Krishna, to become his servant. And whatever Krishna wants, we do. This was Arjuna's perfection. Simply because he was willing to do the will of Krishna and always remember Krishna, he attained the supreme perfection of life. Of course, there is a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the previous life of Narada Muni, when he was the son of a maidservant, at that time, he was so anxious for self-realization. And by the mercy of the Lord, he was given the association of great devotees. And these devotees blessed him. Why did they bless him? Because he served them with great sincerity. He would serve them prasad, he would clean up after them, he would bring them water. Menial servant. But that is, it seems like a very low service, but because it was so pleasing and charming to these great devotees, he was given the highest position because of it. You see, there is a great illusion. We think that particular activities, some are high and some are low. Huh? But high and low really is based on the result that we gain from doing it. It's not so much a question of what we're doing, it's a question of what we will get in return. It's like in business, you know, if you do something and you get tremendous profits from it, you consider that's very high business. Huh? And if you don't get anything, you think it's quite useless, actually. Huh? So, actually, he was doing the highest thing by washing their plates, by sweeping the ground for them to make it nice, by bringing them water. Because by doing that, he was getting the blessings of sadhus. The result was that blessing was the highest treasure, which was opening the doors to the highest realizations. So therefore, what he was doing materially was the lowest, but spiritually was the highest. Whatever pleases Krishna's devotees is the highest. Devotee isn't concerned with this position, or this service or that service. He's only concerned with pleasing the Vaishnavas. If it pleases the Vaishnavas that we give philosophical lectures, then that is the highest. If it pleases the Vaishnavas to water the Tulsi plant, that is the highest. And if it pleases the Vaishnavas to wash the temple floor in the morning, that is the highest. So this little child, he understood, at least to some extent, that by getting the favor of these great devotees of the Lord, there is no greater fortune than that. And because of the blessings of these great Vaishnavas, within his heart was awakened the sincere desire for self-realization and the determination to do anything for it. It didn't come by himself. It came by the blessings of these great souls. In this song, there is a song by Srila Narottam Das Thakur. He's praying to the great Vaishnavas. He's saying, my dear Vaishnava, by bathing in the river Ganges repeatedly, one is gradually relieved of sins. But O devotee of the Lord, By simply seeing you, one achieves the same result. That is the power of the great devotees of the Lord. Because they are carrying within their hearts the divine grace of Sri Krishna. So Narada Muni, he left his home, his mother died, and he traveled everywhere, trying to get deeper and deeper realizations of what is this world, who am I, and who is Krishna. And ultimately, he came to a quiet place in the forest and began to meditate. And in that meditation, he was given the divine vision of Lord Narayan. And it was the perfection of all of his desires. He was so pleased, so happy, so blissful. But then that vision disappeared. So that was a great disturbance to him. He had attained the greatest thing and now he has lost it. Huh? If you never have something, it's not so bad to live without it. But if you have something and then to lose it, very difficult. Very, very difficult. Even in this material world. Srila Prabhupada gives us the story of one high court magistrate who worked for the British government. And he was making so many thousands and thousands of rupees every month. In those days, that was a lot. He was an extremely wealthy man. But Gandhi's movement of non-participation and non-cooperation with the British, he was socially forced, being a Hindu man, he was socially forced to give up his job for the British and accept just a common man's job. And he was getting paid enough to live nicely. But he was accustomed to such a luxurious life. When you become addicted to something, when you become conditioned to something, when you become spoiled by that attachment, then it's more painful than death to have to live without it. Prabhupada explains, within a few months, he died because he was in so much anxiety for not having what he was accustomed to have. But the poor people, they don't die without it because they never had it, right? They live long lives. Huh? So therefore, it's better not to have anything than to get attached to it, because then when you lose it, you can't live without it. Your life is completely terrible. And that's why in Vedic culture, in the Varnashram system, before taking to the Grihastha Ashram, you're supposed to be trained for 20 years as a brahmachari. At the age of 5, you're sent to the ashram of your Gurudev, and then for the next 20 years, you're trained to only eat when you're given food. And if you're not given food, you do not eat. And that food is very simple. And you collect wood in the forest, and you wash the floors, and you clean the vessels, and you massage your Gurudev's lotus feet, and you're just a brahmachari. You do whatever you're told, you sleep on the floor, you wear just a simple piece of cloth, you go out and beg on behalf of your Guru Maharaj. Huh? So you're trained and accustomed to having nothing, to just be satisfied with the simplest gifts of God and be grateful for it. And then you're qualified to enter into the Grihastha Ashram. Huh? And then when you become a Grihastha, you may become very wealthy, very, very, very powerful, and you may have a big, big palace, and you may have so much money and so many luxuries and conveniences, but because of your previous training, you just use it in Krishna's service. You're really not attached to it. You're satisfied with or without it. If everything crumbles down and you have nothing, everything's all right. I'm used to it. And if you gain more, 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 you'll use it for Krishna. You're already accustomed to tasting the sweetness of simple life. This is Vedic culture. Human civilization is a civilization where everyone is striving for more and more detachment, whether they are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, or sannyasis. Everyone, their goal in life is to become more and more and more detached. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagarati bhutani shanisha pashyatomune. Krishna says, but what is day for the enlightened soul, for the devotee, is night for the materialist. Because material civilization is just the opposite. People are working so hard to acquire more and more and more things to become attached to. Huh? What is the saying? Spare the rod and spoil the child. Huh? When a child is spoiled, what does that mean? Spoiled means ruined, right? When a child is accustomed to just getting so many things so easy and having so many conveniences and so many luxuries and so many everythings, the child becomes spoiled because he becomes so attached and so addicted to having his way or her way. When the child grows up a little, the mother and father are not going to be there to give him everything he or she wants. And when he doesn't get it, he's going to be completely miserable, frustrated, and anxiety, and he'll never be happy in life. To teach a child to be content with or without anything, to not be attached, is true virtue in life. Yesterday I was speaking with Nathji Prabhu's mother. She was telling me nice secret information of his childhood. And she was saying, his father, mother, they were very affluent, wealthy people. And he was going to elementary school with big, very good school. The Birla's children and all of these Tata children, they were all going to the school. And one day, little Baal Nathji, he approached his mother and he was crying, saying, my friends, they get big, nice tiffin of food every day. They have so many nice preparations, and you just give me two little preparations and just a little box. And my friends, they are personally driven by chauffeur-driven, nice, fancy cars. And you make me take the school bus. Public bus. He's crying. I want these things. She could afford it. They already had nice cars. It would have been no problem to say to the driver, send Baal Nathji, drive him to school every day. It was nothing. To give him nice food, they had so many cooks, they could have so much. No. She said, I forbid. What were her words? You take the school bus, or the public bus, and you just take this much. I don't want you to become spoiled. I don't want you to become attached to all these luxuries of life. Huh? And because greatly influenced by this good training, he is now Nathji Prabhu. He's become a wonderful devotee. We have seen when we went to Badrinath, he was bathing in the ice-cold Alaknandi River, sleeping on the floor with the rest of the Vaishnavas. Whether he has all these luxuries or he doesn't, he's satisfied just to chant Hare Krishna and be with the devotees. So this is proper training in Vedic culture, to be trained how to be detached and to be trained how to appreciate and enjoy simplicity in life. Our own Guru Maharaj, You know how simple he was when he was living in Vrindavan. You have seen the rooms of Radha Damodar temple. And of course, what we see now, they have been renovated. When he was there, they were very, very simple. Just little clay hut rooms. And he had to go to Jamuna to get his water every day. Huh? Like that. And then when he went to America, he was living very, very simple life. He didn't even know where the next food would come from one day to another. There was no security, there was no insurance in his life. He did not know whether food would come or not come from one day to the next. He was not standing on the side of the road asking for bakshish to feed himself. He was simply preaching, and if Krishna sends, I'll eat. If he doesn't send, then why should I want to eat? Such a simple life. And then, some years later, because of his empowered devotional service, and by the divine grace of his Guru Maharaj, he had a worldwide movement. And his devotees, they were making lakhs and lakhs of rupees a day all over the world. They were printing the most first-class books. They were opening over 108 temples, big, beautiful churches in Toronto, beautiful stone church, so costly we cannot even comprehend. In Los Angeles, big, big, beautiful estate. In London, a mansion with gardens all around. Huh? And then, of course, Bombay, Vrindavan, Mayapur. There were big, big castles bought for him in France and in Germany. Huh? And wherever he went, every devotee just offered him everything. One time, he came to the airport, and the devotees, they rented a beautiful brand new Rolls Royce to pick him up and drive him from the airport to the temple. And it was all decorated with flowers and incense. Even the wealthiest materialist does not have such luxuries as what Prabhupada was being given. Huh? You know, the wealthy materialists, when they come to the airport, they may have a Rolls Royce, but they don't have thousands of people chanting their holy names, giving him garlands and giving him love and devotion and beautiful, beautiful facilities. So he drove back in the Rolls Royce to the temple, and there were all sorts of devotees waiting for him and all sorts of guests. And he could see that the guests, they could not understand. What is this man driving in Rolls Royce? So many, like, they're giving him a rich man when he eats. How many? They might cook him 15, 20 preparations. When Prabhupada arrived at this temple, they had 108 preparations, all cooked in ghee. What wealthy man gets that treatment? Huh? And he just took a piece of an apple. Said, distributed. And somebody was wondering, and they were all served to him on silver plates. And he was looking at the guests. They could not understand this man. He's being put on a Vyasasan, beautiful, beautiful seat, huh? That nobody else is allowed to sit on. You know, even the wealthiest man, his children will jump on his chair when he's not home, right? But Prabhupada had his own seat that nobody else was allowed. And somebody asked him, "You're teaching renunciation, but why you were driven here in a Rolls Royce?" He said, "Because I am just the representative of God, and whatever they are offering to God." He said, "What can you offer too good for God?" He said, "If it was a solid gold Rolls Royce, it would not be good enough." So this is how he accepted on behalf of Krishna. But himself, as soon as all those things were done, he would just sit on the floor. As soon as he accepted all these things for Krishna and gave them to Krishna on behalf of his disciples, he would just sit on the floor and he would say, do you remember those little clay rooms in Radha Damodar? I am simply longing to be back there. Whether he had everything or whether he had nothing, it meant nothing to him. He was simply content thinking of Krishna, serving Krishna, and preaching Krishna's message. He didn't need anything else. He was so simple. When he would come to India, he said, in India, these things we should not have. Huh? He would just sleep on a little rope bed and be happy. He didn't want anything else. So this is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati Samasaravesha Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. One who enjoys the bliss of Brahman. He is always engaged in loving devotional service. He's so satisfied with that service that such a person hankers for nothing he does not have, nor does he lament for anything he loses. And even Lord Brahma, he's living in Brahma Loka, performing his ministerial affairs as the most prestigious and highest person in the universe. But he was most blissful when he was able to become Haridas Thakur. And he was living in a cave with poison snakes. The same Lord Brahma. He was perfectly happy. Why? If Krishna wants me to be Brahma, living in the most beautiful palace in all of creation, or if he wants me living in this cave with snakes, wearing a loincloth, doesn't make any difference. Whatever Krishna wants, that's perfect. As long as I have his service, as long as I'm remembering him and chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare, then I am satisfied. Then I have everything. Huh? Such a perfect example. Such a realization. As Srila Prabhupada used to say, if you are living under a tree and you're asked to live in a palace, it's Maya to be attached to your tree. And if you're living in a palace and you're asked to live under a tree, then it's Maya to be attached to your palace. We should simply be attached to Krishna. And whatever facilities we have, we use it for Krishna. But whether we have it, whether we lose it, really isn't very important. What's important is that we're serving Krishna, we're remembering Krishna. That is real satisfaction. That is the substance of spiritual life. Devotional service. And Lord Brahma is explaining that whatever we achieve and whatever we strive for, if we don't make genuine, tangible advancement on the path of bhakti, then actually we gain nothing but the trouble that we have endured in the process. Neha bikrama nasosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobaya. Krishna says any endeavor that is offered on the path of devotion is eternal. Whatever we do for Krishna, however small, however great, whatever bhakti is offered, that is eternal. It is never lost. But outside of devotional service, everything within creation is temporary. It's lost in due course of time. So therefore, Lord Brahma is explaining like this, that my dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. This is a civilization of beating empty husks of grain. Huh? The occupations of practically everyone, what are they doing? They are working, toiling, suffering so hard simply to beat the empty husks of grain. But Krishna says, whatever we do, yat karoshi rasnasi yat juhoshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi konte yat kurusha madarapana. That same activity, that same work, that same trouble we take, if we simply offer the results to Krishna and remember Krishna, then we find the most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful grain within our effort, which nourishes the soul with pure love, pure joy, and eternal life. So therefore, Krishna teaches in Gita, there is no need to change our occupation in this world, but make Krishna the goal. Engage whatever our propensities are in the process of devotional service. Prepare your consciousness for devotion by associating with sadhus, by chanting Krishna's names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Lord Brahma, after he attained this incredibly divine realization of life, it's not that he just became a mendicant. He went back to Brahmaloka and performed the same duties he was doing before in Krishna consciousness. That is the perfection of life, to always remember Krishna. And whatever we do, to offer it in love to Krishna. Is there any questions?
It is, in fact, very difficult to maintain that equilibrium point, because once we see the people who don't have anything, and when they don't have anything, they become automatically humble and they automatically become very simple.
No, not true. That is a superficial type of simplicity and humility. It is not the humility and the simplicity of the heart. It is an external simplicity and humility based on material circumstances. But a humble heart and a simple heart will remain so under all circumstances. Such people, generally, they're striving for more. They're dissatisfied with what they don't have. Huh? So although they may be physically appearing very simple, their minds are not simple at all, because there's so much in anxiety for what they don't have and what they want. Huh? And a pauper is proud of his penny. Even in the poorest classes of people, if someone has a little more than someone else, one becomes very proud. Huh? So it's relative. But certainly, there is less to be enamored by, akinchana gocharam. So in that sense, it is a benediction. But at the same time, if a person associates properly with saintly persons, then he'll see every situation of life as a benediction. If a person is very wealthy, he'll see such a benediction. I can do such wonderful service with what I have for my Gurudev. And if a person is very poor, he'll think, oh, such a benediction. I can just remain such a simple, humble, menial servant and never forget that position for my Gurudev. Huh? If you associate with saintly persons, you'll realize what every position, every circumstance is auspicious and fortunate. Huh? And that consciousness of being grateful, that is real simplicity, and that is real humility of the heart.
Hmm? Second question. Actually, all the ashrams we see, brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi, as you said, the main aim is to have a detachment. Now, the problem about the grahastha life is such a way that the main thing is detachment. Now, the thing that is a practical problem, I think all the grahasthas might be feeling it, is this way that when the husband and the wife, when they stay together, it has been told in the scriptures that the wife has to be attached to the husband. And she has to do whatever the service that has been told, she has to perform in such a way that she is fully attached to her husband and she has to satisfy him. Now, as and when she is performing the services on that motive itself, we become completely on a neophyte stage, we are not so much advanced into spiritual life, automatically we become somewhat attached to her. And that is a troublesome in spiritual life altogether. Because once we are attached to her, that means it is away from spiritual life. So now, on one side she is attached and on the other side we have to be detached. It becomes such a predicament altogether that how to maintain that status in that situation.
You brahmacharis, you all heard Ananda Vrindavan speak? Achyutananda, you heard that? Arivo. You are speaking for our benefit. Attachment is there, and that attachment is not bad, so long as the attachment between the two is, the two become one, and that is an attachment, but the flow of the consciousness of both is towards service to Guru and Krishna. The brahmacharis are attached to each other too. But their attachment to each other is to just help each other, work together to serve Guru and Krishna. Now, there is not so much danger in the brahmacharis' attachment for each other, because the attachment between a man and a woman, the propensity is always there for sense enjoyment. And therefore, grihasthas have to be very much on guard if they want to properly spiritually advance. They should be attached to each other to help one another in their service to Guru. And to the extent they're associating nicely with devotees, and they're performing very nice sadhana in their homes, and they're respecting their home together as a temple of God, to that extent, they will naturally be conscious that our attachment and affection for one another is in the service of Guru and Krishna. I'm protecting you in the service of my Guru. And you cannot protect someone unless you show them affection. But that affection is not for sense gratification. It is to create an atmosphere by which we can become one in the service of our Guru Maharaj and Krishna. So if you have very, very strong association with saintly persons, and you are serving saintly persons very nicely, and you're hearing from them regularly, and you're chanting your rounds very nicely and strictly every day, and you're really, really trying to create a temple atmosphere in your home, then your attachment for one another will become attachment to Krishna. Because it is all for the sake of helping one another in devotional service. But if you do not have that association, and you do not have that sadhana, then that attachment will simply become the means and the ways to facilitate all sorts of sense gratification. Just like the example is given, that if you're in the forest and a thorn is in your foot, you have to take another thorn to take it out. So one thorn is the source of pain, and the other source is the source, the other thorn is the source of liberation from the pain. So attachment that is really directed by the great sadhus in the service of Krishna, that attachment actually liberates you from the desire for sense gratification. But the same attachment, the same exact attachment, without proper sadhana, without proper direction and association, simply becomes the cause of bondage and misery. Prahlad explains the Grihamedi situation, where the attachment for sense gratification, it is like a deep, dark well with no water. And even when you cry for help, no one hears you. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, when I come to my house, I see my home transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. Because Krishna was the center, his grihastha life was none different than Vaikuntha. But for one who is not properly associating with devotees, chanting the holy names, and living according to these principles, his grihastha life is a deep, dark well of suffering and bondage. Does that answer your question? Question you have?
Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Krishna says, Janma Karma Chime Divyam. So, at this stage, Brahmaji has understood the divine appearance and activities of Lord Krishna, and he is therefore qualified to become Haridas Thakur. Is that right?
He was already qualified. He was a pure devotee from the beginning of creation, this particular Lord Brahma. But Krishna just covered him over with yoga maya, just to teach all of us a good lesson. But as he was covered over, he being so humble by nature, accepted it as his own defect, and prayed to the Lord that because of my big, big position, my big, big house, my power over so many servants and so many living entities, I've become so infatuated and proud that just see how I have forgotten you. Therefore, give me the benediction, he prayed. Let me just live a very, very simple, simple life without all of these attachments so that I can just chant your holy names. And then Lord Chaitanya gave him, Krishna gave him the benediction that you will become Haridas Thakur. And you will be in a situation, being born in an untouchable family, poor family, you'll have nothing except the holy name. And Lord Brahma was ecstatically thanking him. Very nice. It will be a wonderful retreat. But then afterward, he went back to the post of Brahma.
Question is, I heard that from some devotees, I want reconfirmation, that whereas Krishna's appearance is as per some schedule, there's a specific date, time, etc., Lord Chaitanya's appearance is not as per any schedule, so it's very, very rare.
No, that is not true. According to Chaitanya Charitamrita, once in every day of Brahma, which is I think 71 Divya Yugas, is one day of Brahma, Krishna appears at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. And in that same millennium, in Kali Yuga, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears after Krishna, once in every day of Brahma. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains it very, very specifically in this way. Is there any other questions?